a photographer who spent the past year covering the refugee crisis in Germany, Greece, and the Balkans, will detail what he saw during a talk at Williams College tonight. Working for UNICEF, Ashley Gilbertson spent time with people fleeing Syria and Afghanistan as they attempted to reach European nations and integrate into those societies. Some of his work was published in the New York Times. WAMC spoke with Gilbertson about his experience.
Above all, the photographs, you know, from this crisis have really highlighted the human condition, which is the, you know, the amazing drive of human beings to try to provide a future for their children. And that's, you know, it's that what I find very inspiring part of our condition that I'm trying to highlight in these photographs, that even in the face of what sometimes feels like certain defeat, you know, people are willing to struggle and continue to make a better place. Now, you know, the refugee crisis has been an amazing example of that, because, you know, I think the long-term coverage that I've been trying to work on highlights, you know, the journey itself, you know, going from Turkey to Greece, through Serbia, Macedonia, and, you know, these photographs that we're very familiar with, I think, at this point. But to me, what is really vital is the integration aspect after the refugees arrive in places like Germany or Austria. Now, that's what we don't hear about so much. What we see in the newspapers and in the magazines and on television are desperate refugees arriving, and they're messed up, and they're crying, or they're screaming on the beach in Greece. What we're not seeing is people beginning to integrate in schools, people going to, you know, joining the workforce, people, you know, living their normal daily lives as normal human beings, not in exceptional circumstances, in normal circumstances. And I think that it's photographs like that, it's stories like that, that actually humanize who these people are.
In your coverage, did you follow a group of people? Or did you sort of just go all over the place to where all those other places that that you mentioned?
My coverage really began in Germany and then in Greece and Macedonia and on the Balkan route of the refugees. And I wasn't focusing on any particular family. Instead, I was looking at the integration aspects that were taking place, you know, during the emergency section of the crisis in Germany, and also the, you know, the facilitation that was happening on the Balkan route, which was, in my opinion, and I think a lot of people's opinion, a massive failure from the international community. Like, we did not support the refugees as they moved through these countries. Instead, that hole of support was filled by volunteers, which in itself was an amazing thing. Like, I think that organizations like the United Nations and various NGOs should have stepped up and helped more during that crisis. But in the, you know, by the fact that they weren't there, people like you and me would take 2 week holiday or a month holiday and go off, and they would help people on the beaches. They would help people at train stations, and they would actually, you know, provide an humanitarian assistance that is normally provided by these big organizations. So that was really amazing. But then, you know, moving forward, I have followed three families in particular. One family is a Syrian family from Homs, and they've moved to Berlin. Another family is an Iraqi family from Basra. They've moved to Vienna in Austria. And then the third family is actually two boys that were unaccompanied minors. So one was 15 and one was 17. And I found these families, you know, they were among the hundreds that I met on the trip itself. But I've kept in touch with them, and I've made repeated visits to their, you know, to their homes as the year has gone on.
And to those individuals, what were, could you share with me what sort of their daily lives were like as you were with them, and even beyond, as you mentioned, you continued to check in with them?
Let's use one example. And I think that, you know, like the two boys, Ali and Ahmed, they're Lebanese-Palestinian. So they're a particularly complicated case because, you know, the German state doesn't recognize Palestinian refugee claims, except these boys were living in Syria. They moved to Lebanon. They're Palestinian. So they get, you know, they're not given passports. They're not allowed to work in almost any job in Lebanon. They're not permitted to go to regular schools. So they don't have a fair shot. So then they, on, you know, with their parents' blessing, they moved to Germany. and they took 3 weeks trying to get there. They had this devastating trip, you know, over land trying to make it there. They almost turned back at a place called Shid in Serbia, up on the Serbian border, because it was just so difficult. And they called their mother and said, "We're coming home." And she said, "No, you know, go to Germany. You have a chance at life there." So, you know, these boys who thought they were going to die at sea, the 17-year-old has given up, essentially sacrificed his childhood so that he can become the father figure for his younger brother, who's 15. And he's looking after him. You know, he's in a, today, they're living in a shelter for children in a small town near Hanover in Germany. The younger boy is, like, after 1 year, he's speaking fluent German with no accent. Like, on the telephone, you can't tell this is a kid who, until a year ago, didn't speak a word of German. The older brother, Ali, who is now 18, he's working as an apprentice hairdresser. He's attending a trade school. He's learning philosophy and religion, as well as German. And they're both integrating amazingly well into society. So, you know, their living conditions have gone from literally sleeping on the road while they were making the journey to being a part of this youth shelter in near Hanover and becoming members of society. So that is a huge difference in only 1 year, which I find really inspiring. But when you start dealing with a bureaucratic German state, you know, this is on a case-by-case basis, of course, except it's really random as to whether or not people are allowed to stay. But there are certain rules. So the German state does not recognize Palestinian refugee claims. So these boys have already been once denied asylum. So they've appealed that decision because they don't want to go back to Lebanon. There's a blood feud in their family, and they haven't got the opportunities. So why shouldn't they have the opportunities in Germany? You know, like, Germany's talking about integration. These boys have integrated perfectly. So it's, you know, it's a very, there's no cut and dried. I'm trying to highlight the fact that there's no cut and dried sort of refugee journey here. Like, there is the understanding, I think, in the United States and Europe that you leave Syria because it's war-torn and you go to Europe and you try to set up a life there. It's way more complicated than that. You know, it's far more complex than that. There are people coming from all over the world. I mean, the Syrians have been very, you know, well looked upon by the German state, for example, because they're often very highly educated. But then, you know, what about the hundreds of thousands of Afghans that are there that have never had a day of education in their life? You know, the challenges for integration there are far more difficult than for a Syrian family. But when you accept the responsibility of providing asylum to refugees, these are the responsibilities that you assume.
And Ashley, in your reporting, did you speak with any of these people who were fleeing their homes about the international political sort of controversy that has come along with this refugee crisis? And if so, in speaking with them, did you get a sense of what their response to that was, what they thought of it?
Yeah, I mean, there's been a couple of really poignant examples, I think, of this on my travels. The first that comes to mind was, you know, I wasn't sure how much the refugees, you know, the three families that I was working with were really paying attention to the local politics. And when I say local politics, I'm talking about, like, nationwide presidential politics, or even the American elections. But I was out sitting with a family, and they were having lunch, like, behind this refugee shelter that they were living in. And this is the Iraqi family from Basra. And they were sitting with friends. And this is during the time of the Austrian presidential elections. And there was a man called Hofer who was running. He's extreme right wing. So when people in Austria are talking about the left and the right, in the past they've always said left and right. Now they talk about the Nazi Party. This guy is extreme right. He's extreme anti-immigration. He's about a white Austria. So this is some of the hardest right politics in Europe. When the results started coming in, it was razor's edge between the two candidates. And Hofer ended up losing. But he won 49.7% of the vote. So when he lost by 0.3%, all of these text messages started coming in, and I heard everybody's phones ringing in this little park we were sitting in. And I said, "What is that?" Because people started cheering and clapping. and the family told me Hofer lost, the Nazi lost, because they recognized immediately that, you know, that decision made on this national level by the Austrians would directly affect their, you know, their status as refugees in the country and their ability to actually stay there. So that was really interesting. And then, you know, on a far more local sense, when people are dealing on a day-to-day basis, the refugees, they, as time is passing, they're experiencing far more racism than they have in the past. So whether that's on subways, whether that's in the workplace, you know, Amira Raslan, who is a Syrian refugee living in Berlin that I've been visiting for the last year, she tells me that every day she takes a subway with her kids to take them to school, she is met with these, you know, fierce stares from people that, you know, don't make her feel welcome at all. So she says, you know, what am I supposed to do? So all I can do is meet their stares with smiles. And I don't know if that's going to, if I'm going to have to smile for the next week or the next year, or if I'm going to teach my children and my grandchildren to smile back at this hate. But that's the challenge I'm prepared to take.
Do you plan to go back to continue your reporting in these regions?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the story of integration with these three different families is representative of a much broader experience for the refugees that can relate to, you know, European integration, but also American and Australian integration. Now, you know, I think large portions of our society are quite afraid of who these people are, but also the type of space put on the societies that we've built. So in my experience, you know, these people are very, you know, like really, really amazing people with amazing spirits. And I would like to continue to highlight that. But I would also like to, you know, keep focusing on the challenges and successes that these families experience as they continue to integrate. Because I think that we have very solid examples of, you know, badly made decisions over the past decades. And whether we're talking about the ghettoization of Islam in Europe or the ghettoization of poverty in the United States, we can learn from that. We can learn that we made bad decisions in regard to town planning, in regard to sociological aspects. And we can learn from that and apply those lessons that we have learned from with the refugees that are in Germany and Austria and Sweden today. So as a photographer, as a reporter, I'm very, you know, I'm very committed to this story to make sure that, you know, these people have a spotlight on them and the same mistakes are not made again. You know, I think that that's one of the functions of journalism, to make sure that pressure is kept on, you know, the men and women in power, to make sure that the rest of us, and that includes refugees, are treated equally and fairly.